Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This is James Fox, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
I'd like to thank Laird Superfood for sponsoring this episode. My nutrition has changed a lot over the last year since I decided to look after myself a little bit more, not just for me, but my family too. One constant though is my coffee, and you'll know I'm a big coffee lover. It's not just part of my morning, but my daily routine. Laird Superfood and their creamers have been a bit of a game changer for me and taken my coffee game to a whole new level. It's the perfect way to not only fuel your morning, but your whole day with organic, natural, plant-based ingredients. And for me, as a diabetic, there is no sugar from highly refined corn syrup. There's also a huge variety of snacks, baking mixes, and protein options for you to try, all made with plant-based ingredients to keep you charged for whatever life takes you. Are you ready to feel more energized, focused, and supported? Go to lairdsuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunset to sunrise. Use promo code THATUFO at checkout to save 15% off your purchase today.
And Nathan on Arrow performance review.
It's the Arrowphant in the room. So I've been waiting on that one. I should appreciate that, Eddie. I think you can imagine it was a little bit of a political gamesmanship happening there when this whole balloon debacle took place, and the executive, sort of making the decision to implement an executive. Tasking an official group to deal with this. It looks better for the executive to have that initiative and have the, we're taking action, we're doing something. And you saw this in the rhetoric too. The politicians were saying, wait, we already had something, like, why don't we just fund the thing that we've on a bipartisan basis already created, and let's just build out the framework that we've already had in motion. From the executive perspective, it's like, well, we need the political points here. We need to look strong. We need to look like we have our arms around this, that we're in control. And so they're implementing something that sounds like a thing an executive would do. That's like the classic thing an executive would do. You've built this awesome thing down in the lower department. Well, I'm going to steal it, and it's my idea now, so we're doing it. And the whole company's on board. And in the lower department, people are like, we've been talking about this for years. So I think that's a little bit of what's happened here, if I could kind of use that as a corporate analogy. It ultimately is a win overall, I think, because it is a higher level, higher profile effort here. I would also, though, I think, ask folks to consider, what is wrapped up in the entire exercise of disclosure. And this is obviously a huge topic we could go down into here. But, where does it come from? Who should it come from? How is it going to happen? And what is it really about? What does it really mean? And I think, I take very seriously some of the insight that I've gotten from folks like Frank Milburn, who've talked about this from a state level perspective. If we're talking about the kind of technology that is literally paradigm shattering and game changing, our government, any state government, is not going to show all of its cards right away. It would be irresponsible of them to do that. So I think we have to, in some ways, temper our expectations from the state in terms of what they're going to ultimately share with us. I do want the state to take it seriously, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing happen. But I would caution folks to sort of put all of their hope, all of their eggs in a government disclosure basket, because I don't know that that's really going to happen. And I would also argue that, maybe that it shouldn't happen that way, that there's something about disclosure, about this phenomena generally, that is not something that is going to come from the top down. In a way, it has to come from the bottom. It has to come from an individual level and percolate up through the society. And, you know, this is interesting because I want to make a quick tie-in to Chris Bledsoe, because, and many other experiencers who've had encounters, it's a deeply personal experience that they have that changes the way they look at the world. It changes the way they look at their family and their lives. And they feel a sense of change, but it also causes them, it catalyzes them to want to act in a broader way. You know, one of the very first things Chris did when he had these encounters, he started planting a garden in his yard. He thought he was going to have to feed his neighborhood because he thought literally the world was ending. He was going to have to kind of provide for people in his community. So, you know, you can see how that individual change led to other changes.
You guys, Ryan and Dan are still there. Nathan's gone.
Someone's hacking the feed.
Yeah, Nathan was making too good a point there. Well, we'll give Nathan a few seconds to come back on. Do any of you want to come in on that so we can just keep kind of going?
Yeah, so recently, you know, I've said it a few times, I've been watching Three Body Problem series, you know, that adaptation was out there. And something that Nathan said was actually really interesting in regard to that. So something that the species does in that show is it sends something to Earth to mess with science. And the whole point of them doing that is to make people on Earth question scientists, to make them question the narratives of people and to make people look crazy, so that when, you know, they're told stuff about the visitors, people just don't believe it. It's essentially, you know, like I mentioned with the cognitive manipulation stuff, it's information warfare on a whole different level than we're used to. You nudge a few people here and there, and you know, you make people switch off to certain causes and things like that. Just look at the Israeli space chief that spoke a few years ago. He said some really interesting things about like galactic kind of federations and things like that. And it seemed so out there that a lot of people just switched off to it. What if he was telling the truth? You know, I'm not saying that he was, but what if? And it's just too much for us. So it kind of speaks to the need to do it slowly and deliberately. But it makes me wonder who could tell the truth that people these days would trust, because it's not the government. And a lot of people don't believe in science. We've seen that through COVID. So where would it come from?
I think any of us pick or choose, don't we, as to what's that point with this topic. And I find this on the Discord chat really interesting, with some of the guys who'll be like, and some of the girls in there, where people will be making a point and really interested, and then they'll go to abductions and then really out there experiences, and people will say, nah, that's where the topic kind of loses me. And it's that breaking point for them of that's too much. And I think that the Israeli stuff about the Galactic Federation, and it's when it starts to sound too Star Trek-y, I think I start to go, you've lost me. But like you say, why not? As someone who's got like a story, I seen a UFO that was the size of like a Ferris wheel, you know, not that far from me in the mid-90s. People would just think I make that up anyway. But I have to think and go, well, that sounds ridiculous. Because if someone told me that story and I had never seen that myself, I would think, yeah, no, not for me. So you have to give people that, well, okay, if that's your story, as incredible as it sounds. And I've mentioned before, you know, like the folks that will sit on one of the documentaries from last year that had like the hybrid baby stuff. And I start to get a little bit, when it comes to that. And people say they've been impregnated and it's been taken away, and there's this hybrid race living on the planet. And Nathan's came back on right at that point, and he's going to be like, well, where did this go? But just talking about Nathan, those points in the UFO topic where it's enough for you, and you struggle to really not believe, but hold credibility in certain aspects of it. People have different areas where they have to go, no, for me that's kind of enough. Dan had mentioned the Galactic Federation stuff before, but he'd picked up on a point that you made talking about the three body problem and one of the species. Dan, what was it, just off the back of what Nathan had said?
Yeah, so one of the species in it sends something to Earth that manipulates science and essentially makes scientists sound crazy so that people stop trusting it, and then when it comes to scientists talking about life out there, people just don't believe them. So essentially the point we were getting at is that, you know, people don't trust the government, people don't trust science, as we've seen in the last few years. So who is an authority for this? And Andy rightfully said that, you know, we each kind of have a different source of authority. But it's a really interesting discussion point, I thought.
Yeah, completely. And I apologize for that. Because we're having a storm here. But, you know, all of it is crazy, right? I mean, that's the thing. And I think that, you know, I try to take a perspective of looking at history and looking at kind of paradigm shifts that happen in history and what that must have been like for those that were on the fringes of understanding the world. People who, like Galileo, you know, a great example, who had this understanding, this insight about the world that was totally different than everything around him, the world that he grew up in. And, you know, it takes a very long time for those insights to permeate and, you know, spread around the rest of society. And until they do, you are the crazy person. You know, you are out there, you are on the fringe. Which is not to say that every person on the fringe has some amazing insight about reality, but it does say that's how it would happen, right? So that consensus reality isn't just, I think we've gotten accustomed to this, right? That the way in which we know things is just going to incrementally grow because science has, the scientific method has taught us that's how knowledge grows. It's just this incremental expansion of information. And it's very predictable and it's very safe and comfortable. And that's just how it works. And we're all nodding along because that's how we've lived that experience. I've lived that experience. That's how it works. But the truth is, like, if you think about how big the universe is, like it's the amount of hubris that you would have to say like, well, yeah, I guess we've kind of cracked it now. So our awareness going forward is always going to be this neat, clean, incremental progress. And we're never going to be blindsided. We're never going to be surprised that we may have it all wrong. And I think that's what the phenomenon is really saying, quite frankly, is that what we commonly look at as reality and the way things work isn't quite right, that it's interrupting, it's perturbing our understanding of how things are. And
the storm might have just got Nathan again there, but I think we'll leave his point there and we'll get him back in. I'm going to move on because I think this will fit nicely into some of the stuff we were talking about there in terms of, oh, Nathan, we just lost you. But you, at the point you'd made, it sounded kind of nice to round off there. I'll move on just when you'd cut off and come in with Ryan. Peter wanted to know about Gary Nolan's comments he'd made recently on a podcast, I believe it was UAP Studies, about shadow biosphere. And he basically said, Gary Nolan claims he has seen data from a couple of groups where they have had extraordinary interactions with something, apparently in some sort of experiment or test. They managed to once, it couldn't repeat, but they saw once that something basically was communicating with them. I don't know if any of you saw that comment. That was the gist of it. Gary Nolan, for me, is one of those incredibly credible individuals, someone I listen when he speaks, and I don't think he just throws out statements, you know, just for the sake of it, to give himself a laugh. I don't think he's that type of guy, as wonderful a sense of humour he has. What are your thoughts on that? And I suppose if you haven't heard those comments, it'd be a bit of speculation, but as to the who and the what would be involved in that. Oh, you're on mute. Lol.
There we go. I haven't looked much into this concept of the biosphere. However, I think this kind of speaks to this larger, I guess, theory that a lot of people have posed of if the phenomena has been there all along right next to us. We've heard people like Elizondo talk about this, or Gary Nolan, or Jacques Vallée even. This idea of something being there all along and us not really knowing it. So I think that's really interesting that Gary would bring something like that up and pose those theories and even go as far as to say experiments have been done to try to unlock that or find that something that's been right next to us all this time. I think it's really fascinating. I'd really want to look more into it before I make any actual thoughts or or formulated opinions on it. But yeah, I think, again, it kind of speaks to this broader idea that the phenomenon itself doesn't just always come from above or even below. It could be all around us all the time, and we're just getting these small glimpses every now and again. And yeah, I find it all fascinating, but I am in no place to comment any further there than that on it, I think.
I'd like to thank Paperlike for sponsoring this episode. I've had my Paperlike on the iPad now for a few months and wonder already how I ever done without it. One of the biggest differences for me is how much better the iPad screen looks. The reflection without the Paperlike on long train journeys or in the office was pretty bad, but now watching movies and TV shows is a far more pleasant experience. There just isn't that shine bouncing off the screen. Taking notes and writing podcast shows is also transformed, as it feels like it says I am writing onto paper, thanks to the nano dot technology, tiny microbeads designed to add superior stroke precision when you drag the Apple Pencil across the screen. Perfect for designing your next hobby balloon to be shot down by the US military. I kid. Paperlike is perfect for anyone who owns an iPad and an Apple Pencil. It's a must have. They really should put it in with iPads. I'd love to see them get that kind of deal. You do get a set of two when you buy it, so you always have the spare. It's genuinely made me use my iPad more than I did before, so it's given my existing technology a brand new lease of life. To pick up your Paperlike, head over to paperlike.com/thatUFO, click buy Paperlike and select your iPad size. So if you're ready to do more with your iPad, head over to paperlike.com/thatUFO to get started.
For me, and there wasn't much more to it, Ryan, than that comment. He wouldn't give any details, obviously, as to who it was and what had happened, but just that he saw some incredible data. Dan, I'll come to you. It made me think immediately Skinwalker Ranch NIDS type situation, where I think I asked Lou and Brandon Fugel and stuff about this as well. Have they ever tried to communicate with whatever it was, and was it successful? And we've heard from George Knapp and others about, you know, various games and stuff being left out, and things have been kind of played with, toyed with, messed about, but this sounded a bit further and more technically advanced than that.
Yeah, it's the shadow biosphere is such an interesting conversation, because we're constantly finding these new biospheres. I think it was like 1850s. A doctor, I want to say Semmelweis, he was the guy that came up with the basic idea of washing your hands before you do surgery. Before that point, doctors were losing people left, right, and center because they didn't realize the germs existed. You know, that was a shadow biosphere that we uncovered. You know, my mom, when she was growing up, she used cleaning solutions that would leave 80% of what modern day cleaning solutions would kill on the table, and she didn't care. She didn't know that it was there. She didn't interact with it. She didn't think about it. And now, you know, she just wants to kind of just bleach the whole house, you know, because of this biosphere that exists that she didn't know about 50 years ago, and she wants to deal with it. It's really interesting. Life isn't what we think. We're constantly expanding our definitions and ideas about what exists and what can exist. Scientists now are talking about, you know, the multiverse, about dimensions, and what kind of is at the bottom of the universe. And there's some ideas that, you know, it's just information based, and we're kind of in a holographic representation of that. So if life could be in just that information, what does that look like? How do we talk to that when we make things like general AI? Is that what we're making? Can it get away from the computer and just live in this basic level of the universe and interact with people? That kind of stuff would lead to encounters that Peter Lavenda kind of hinted at, where if there was a being like that that came to the planet and we all had a simultaneous dream of contact, then that denotes contact. You know, like, what is communication? These definitions are things that we need to kind of start thinking about. Does the Tic Tac, you know, reacting to David Fravor, does that constitute communication? I'd say so, but some people would say no, not at all. We live in dimension that I think I might get this wrong, but it's three of space, one of time. You change that equation in any way, something else could live there, and that space could be a space that it can only function in. So how would we interact with that? How would they build machines that worked at our level? And that just takes me to thinking about the idea of secret machines, or as if you want to expand on that, secreted machines. To interact at our level, or a smaller space or a bigger space, we would have to build machines in that space. So maybe a wormhole isn't a doorway. Maybe it's a manufacturing point to create something that can operate in our reality. This subject, I love it because it kind of gets so sci-fi and you really get to kind of, you know, just wax lyrical on it. So I'll leave it there. But yeah, it's really interesting considering what communication with other beings could look like.
It gets very Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Quantumania, yeah, obviously, the latest one where, you know, he's been shrunken down but gets big when he's small and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, they were trying to talk about that in the film. And but yeah, Nathan and yourself, well, we've got a good connection still as well. It looks like all's good. You're back. Shadow Biosphere comments, Gary Nolan saying he's seen data from a few groups. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just would echo what Dan said and Ryan as well. The and this kind of, you know, obviously fits along with the point I was making that, you know, we're going to be interrupted by something that we're not expecting, essentially, that we'll have discoveries that will come at us from sort of vectors that we're not prepared for. And those will result in some pretty tectonic changes in the way we understand who we are and our place in the universe and all those things. I think AI is already starting to kind of give us some hints there that there is a lot going on that we don't quite understand. The way that it can kind of synthesize information and repackage that and provide it to us. You can only imagine the amount of information that exists in the human library right now. And so many disciplines that never talk to each other, that never have any interaction whatsoever. But now we have a platform which can look at that information, look for similarity, draw new conclusions that have never been drawn just by connecting some of these pieces of research and insight. And I think that that's really exciting, but it's also going to be very destabilizing, just like it would be when we encounter a shadow world that we didn't know was there the entire time. I mean, wait, you're telling me germs are everywhere. Well, how afraid should I be? You know, what do I need to do? Are they going to assault me? You know, what's happening there? And so I think that, but we learn to live with them. That's the lesson from the germ discovery. We learn to coexist with them in ways where we can preserve a sense of who we are, but we've integrated that awareness into our understanding. And I think that's where we are headed. But the integration with this topic, whatever this is, I think is going to be profound and it's an amazing time to be alive.
So it doesn't sound like you prescribe to the old germ threat narrative that is purported out there by people. You're more peaceful, coincide, love and light germs.
Love and light germs, exactly.
Yeah. You don't believe in Domestos, any of those bleach products that are out there.
Ultimately, the germs are good for us, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You can kill too many of them, can't you? But do you know what? And some of the stuff you said there, Nathan, I don't know if you've saw, Dan, I'm guessing you will have, and Ryan, I don't know if you will have, Theory of Everything, Kurt J. Mungle's recent interview with Leslie Keane. And yeah, Ryan, you're saying you've seen it as well. I wasn't sure. She talked about in 10 years' time how different she thinks the world's going to be, given sources she's spoken to. And I know Ross Coulthart has said various things like this as well, that she mentioned geopolitically, but also in terms of the UFO topic and discoveries that are going to be made and whatnot, that it's going to be very difficult for us to have the same way of life we have now, given things that will come out, we'll discover, and just the way the world will go. Is, again, do you think that very much pertains to the discoveries around the UFO topic, UAPs?
This is a tricky one, right? I think all of us, we've talked to enough experiencers, we've read enough encounters where we are a little bit, I'm trying to think of the right phrasing, there's a little bit of fatigue to this sort of, cataclysm narrative, which I think is the subtext of what she's getting at there. So it's nothing new. We've heard that before over and over. So the way I look at that, though, is that there's something true to this insight of endings. Endings have been a part of our story for a long time. Apocalyptic endings are a part of most of our mythologies. There's something ingrained in the human psyche, if you will, whether it's just a existential dread or not, I don't know. But it's a part of who we are. And I think we need to wrestle with both the macro idea of that and the personal idea of that. Because the reality is one day the world does end for you, right? The world literally ends as you know it. And something else, you know, lays beyond that. And so whether that's happening globally or happening individually, in a way is in some ways kind of irrelevant. And I think we need to maybe not worry so much about how it ends and focus on who we are in the face of that ending. And that's to me the biggest takeaway to the whole thing.
Dan, Ryan, one of you want to come back in on that? Again, Leslie's comments.
Yeah, I'll touch on it briefly. I mean, I did catch that part of the conversation. I think it was towards the end, how appropriate, of the interview. And it's weird. You know, I've met with Leslie. I've had conversations with her. We all have. And that was one of the first times I've really seen her talk about something so kind of definitive or almost sobering or sombering even. And that kind of brings me back to, you know, Kurt also asked her, if what would the public think if they knew the amount of stuff you knew about all this? And that's been asked of Elizondo and all these other people who allegedly have more information than the public has. And they all sort of say the same thing. And are they feeding off one another, or do they all really personally believe if the public knew what was really going on with the phenomena, it would be a very sombering revelation? And this is kind of what I'm looking at right now. It's not going to be the answers we want. It's not going to be the answers that a lot of people expected. It's probably going to be far more complex and possibly even disturbing, but also paradigm shifting. Like Nathan said, I think, you know, every story has an end, and eventually all of us are going to come face to face with that in our own lives. It's a matter of, like you said, how you integrate that into your life and how you live that journey and pursue, I guess, that mystery, rather than what is it? When is it going to happen? When is the end? Or is it going to be apocalyptic? I personally can't live my life that way, thinking that way. So yeah, it was interesting to hear Leslie talk like that. I've never really heard her talk like that in an interview before. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely no idea what she could have meant by it, other than, you know, we're all going to have to face some very hard truths when the truth does eventually out on a lot of this stuff. And that I don't look at it as good or bad. I look at it as it's a learning process, and it's where we go from there. So yeah. I think it was interesting, and not the Leslie I know, and not the Leslie that I think a lot of us hear a lot of the time. So that was interesting.
Dan, just before you make your point on it, I'll frame the question to you in this way, that if anyone's out there and you think, oh my God, this is like apocalyptic in the terms of, you know, Armageddon type, Independence Day, end of the world type scenarios, would Leslie Kane, Ross Coulthart, Lou Elizondo, and anyone in the past, present, or future who's going to speak about those types of events happening, if they knew about those being truly world-ending, would they be wasting their time writing books or giving us any of their time sitting on podcasts or speaking at conferences if they knew that was coming? I don't think so. If it was going to be, you know, that sort of Terminator 2 Judgment Day scenario, but more of a, like you say, paradigm shift. There's going to be a way of thinking that changes, aspects of a way of life changes, or do you think they are just nice enough to give us our time in the face of impending doom?
I would like the time of day, so I know whether to get up early to, you know, do my hair, stuff like that. Yeah. it'd be good instead of just like the month. I want to know exactly when.
Yeah.
But you're totally right. You know, revelations, they're new beginnings. They're shifts. They're not endings. And where I currently am in Mexico, something has become very, very clear to me. The encounter between the Maya and the conquistadors is often spoken about as, you know, when an advanced species comes in, they wipe out the indigenous species. That's not true. They're still here. Their ancestors are still here. They're still practicing the rituals. They didn't go away. Life transformed. And it transformed for the invaders too. What happened, you know, like a whole bunch of people switched sides and loved the way of life here and wanted to preserve it. And now the culture that you have is this kind of mishmash of two things and resulted in something that neither side thought they would ever be a part of. And I think that subtlety is worth considering. You know, like we say, it's not an ending, it's a new beginning. It's a transformation into a way of life that you were not accustomed to before. Science often comes from left field. It's not a comfortable kind of like, oh yeah, you know, we've got the PS5 now, so I know there's going to be a PS10. Chances are, you know, Nintendo will make another Wii and totally blow the competition out of the water in a way that they weren't expecting. While you guys were talking about it, I just chucked into the AI Bing thing. I asked it what some of the cutting edge sciences that we should be paying attention to. And it gave me a few examples: synthetic biology, quantum computing, brain-computer interfaces, autonomous systems, geoengineering, synthetic chemistry, space exploration. All those things are manipulating space and matter. So imagine if you didn't need to go to a supermarket anymore. Imagine if you didn't need to sit on a website and fill your basket and then order it. You could just think about these things and they would materialize in front of you. It would totally change the world. And in ways that we're not expecting. This AI stuff is already doing that for us, right? Like, people are talking about the end of certain job roles and things like that, and how we serve the people who were doing those roles before. Do they just whittle away in society, or do we support them in another way? It's worth remembering as well that, and I'm going to quote the great It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia here, that science is a liar sometimes. The whole thing with Galileo, science advanced by kicking and screaming. He said objectively, this is what's going on, and the world did not believe him. They locked him in a tower. They denied him, you know, his life. And it's just these massive advancements always come with pain. Whether you think it's good or bad is kind of by the by. This is how we advance. 95% of the universe isn't known to us. It's dark matter, it's dark energy. There could be anything there. A two-month-year-old could probably figure out more than 95% of snakes and ladders, and we think we know what consensus reality is. It's crazy to me that we act as if we know what's in the world when really we really don't. You know, just the idea of, you know, we touch things isn't even true. It's forces interacting between us, and those kind of subtleties are with things like Quantumania. People are going to start understanding these things in really simple ways. And it's astounding to think that someone that watches that movie and comes away kind of going, wait, so there could be life at a small scale? Like, what is the quantum world? That person knows more about the universe and is more cutting edge than the average person, or probably the average scientist 100 years ago. They're just further down the path. And that took us all to kind of discover and repackage and pass around and talk about. The afterlife was something that Leslie spoke about as well, which is really interesting. And consciousness studies are kind of going in that direction to kind of be like, you know, what makes me me? You know, what is my damnness? Like, is it different to Nathan or Ryan? Are we all just the same thing in different bodies, having different experiences, and that makes us who we are? It's a really, really interesting question. I'd recommend that people search out some of the peer-reviewed studies on the afterlife that Leslie spoke about on that show, because they exist. And no one really has an answer. They're just mind-blowing. But ultimately, it all leads to us kind of asking ourselves, what does it mean to be human? Because our idea at the moment, you know, the body, consciousness, how we look, not every human has two legs, two arms. You know, we are all in different forms. And defining something other is going to also define ourselves in a way that we just aren't aware of right now. So as we go forward, we're going to be creating life. We're going to be manipulating matter and space. And that's going to really, really change how we see ourselves.
I'd like to thank User Interviews for sponsoring this episode. When I first started promoting User Interviews a few months ago, I had a wonderful response from many of you out there who got on board early and earned some extra dollars at what's during what's a tough financial time. User interviews connects researchers with real people like you, quality participants who earn money for their feedback on real products. Right now, there's a high demand for software developers and engineers to give feedback on products being created for developers. It's free to sign up. In less than 5 of our Earth minutes, you can apply for your first study. Most studies are less than an hour and pay over $60. Some studies pay several hundred dollars for a one-on-one interview. You get to share your opinion on top brands such as Adobe, Spotify, Intuit, Amazon, and many more. I've even signed up myself, and the process was very quick. If you're ready to earn extra income from sharing your expert opinion, head over to userinterviews.com/hello to sign up and participate today. Some really good points. I just want to mention, I'm not intelligent enough to think about some of these crazy ideas and work them out from kind of start to finish. So I try and really simplify complicated things so that they make sense to me. And you know, when you're talking about, people might be thinking it's crazy that you can just think of ordering your shopping and it appears at your door. And I just think, well, actually, if we've got that process almost already. But if you look at Amazon, and I don't know if they still do them, a couple of years ago, you could order a button. For example, you could put a magnetic button on your washing machine that would link via your Wi-Fi to, when you press it, it would order new washing up powder, that brand, with a click of a button. So you didn't even have to go onto Amazon, log into your account, find the washing powder, order, put in your details. All that was done already. You just clicked the button and it ordered it for you. And I think of it this way, that all you actually need now for that process to work, like you said, Dan, is how do we remove the button? Because we've got all the rest of that information and process already there. And it's like a lot of this stuff in so many stages is there. It's just removing that one thing, like the television. You know, I'm watching the football game. Yeah, but how could I be more immersed in that? How can you get me in the TV? You know, that virtual reality side of things. How can you take away the helmet? How can you take away the glasses, the mask, the actual physical product? And it's just that next step, or maybe two steps away from some of these things being more possible and realistic than maybe people realize. And that's the way I kind of try and break down some of these ideas.
That's spot on, and that's so true. And you can kind of see it with, you know, what Meta are doing with the VR yeah. stuff, where they're kind of going, yeah, we're going to make people an avatar and they can walk around in these spaces. And people are kind of going, why? I can go outside. Like, why would I need that? Like, that system will look different when they get it right. It'll yeah. kind of complement our reality. It won't replace it. We're not going to go into Ready Player One. But to your point about, you know, entertainment and enjoying it, something like Neuralink could give us an experience of, you know, I want to watch Endgame and experience all the emotions of Tony Stark yeah. and see how he feels and how he thinks as he goes through it. You know, shut my brain off as I'm doing it. I'm sure you'd love to watch a football game and be inside Ronaldo's head. And kind of experience what it's like to be Ronaldo. And those kind of things, they're, you know, maybe 10, 20, 30 years away. Like, it's not that far.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I've had, speaking of endings, we're getting towards the end of the time for all of you gents as well. So I want to fire through quickly a couple of ideas. So we'll keep it as short as possible. But recently, a few listeners, Xander, Joe, and a few other people asked about George Knapp on Weaponized, talking about the story that Al O'Donnell revealed that they had a live being at Area 51. This was told to a few different people. Your thoughts on the idea that on podcasts like Weaponized, we're now hearing these kind of stories coming out. I don't know if this was the same one, because I'm not fully up to date. And I know, Dan, you had messaged on the UAP media chat maybe about this, where someone said that one of the small humanoids resembled Ross Perot, who I don't know who that is, but everyone's nodding on camera. So, yeah, can someone fill me in on that one?
Ryan.
Yeah, I'm not a huge political person, but I do remember when Ross Perot ran for office. He's just this small, spindly dude with huge ears. He was, you know, completely like fodder for SNL for a while.
Okay.
I think Dana Carvey played him, if I'm correct in that. Okay. So the fact that a dead alien was not so much a gray, but was Ross Perot definitely made me giggle when George Knapp brought that up. And then it also just plays into the absurdity of all of this.
Yeah.
Like, no, of course the alien wasn't a typical gray. It looked like Ross Perot, this like super obscure person who ran for office in the United States. So yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting when I heard it, and definitely got my attention.
Yeah.
those kind of revelations, are we going to get more of those, do you think, on Weaponized? Something that stood out to me is that on the first episode, they mentioned it wouldn't just be UFOs. They would go true crime, paranormal, and that's probably a good idea because I think there's a finite amount those guys could do without starting to dip into maybe the stuff that we cover on various different shows and formats, and I don't think that's what they're going for. So are we going to get some big revelations? I know Jeremy Corbell's already hinted at another High Noon coming this Wednesday. Or do you see the podcast being more of a series? Dan, we kind of talked about that, didn't we, before, about is it going to be a continuing thing, or would it be better served being six shows and it goes away for a while, six shows and it goes away for a while?
Yeah, for me, I would, to be honest, I'd prefer them to kind of get the ducks in a row and present the information as whole pieces. You know, I can understand that in today's media landscape, you kind of have to generate hype and get people talking about it, and that's what spreads the message. Recently, after they did the Mosul orb reveal, Jeremy went on to CNN to kind of talk to them about some things. And that connection there, you know, if they have more videos, it makes sense to use the connection to CNN to present them on the news program so that they're a bit more reputable going around. And I say that with a pinch of salt because there's a lot of people that will be groaning at me for saying the CNN is reputable out there. But that just speaks to our point about authority earlier, right? We need robust information presented. As much as I love these stories, they are just stories without that.
Yeah, fair enough. I would agree. Yeah, Jeremy Corbell and George, you know, they're doing a good job of, I think, bringing the energy up to the topic. These sort of, I don't know, like highly caffeinated sound bites in a way, like, and that's kind of their thing. And Jeremy's great on camera. I think he's really compelling when he does interviews. So I do think we'll continue to see some, you know, interesting nuggets come out of that. I think regarding the alien, you know, tidbit, I mean, that just fits along with what we've all heard for years, that they're to me, that just adds one additional data point to that story, that there really was something there. Honestly, I've been looking a lot more at Ryan Graves's podcast, you know, Merged. Mm-hmm. I thought that's the production quality is really, really good. And that's what I'm looking at to see how the consensus is changing, because the more that he's bringing in these pilots who are just comfortable being like, yeah, I'm a lifetime pilot. I've flown people around the world. I've got, you know, thousands of hours in the sky. I mean, these are the most reputable people you could imagine. And he's got them, just seems like a never-ending supply of them willing to come forward and talk about their experiences. That, to me, is pointing at the stigma changing in a big way.
Do you know, for me, that the Merged podcast idea, though, is that a sustainable long-term podcast in terms of format? Because how many pilots can you have on week after week talking about their experience? I would love to have seen that in the format of an episode of Leslie Kane's series, for example. Or is that a 60 minutes piece on its own, where here we have Ryan Graves, an authority because of his background and experience and the way he speaks, how eloquent he is. And he's a handsome guy, so he's presentable on a television show, as you will know, Ryan. Being one yourself.
Stop.
But, you know, is that something that's a hard-hitting 60 minutes piece where he gets them on back to back to back, 5 minutes, bang, bang, bang. And that also translates to your TikTok clips. That translates to your YouTube shorts. Here are all these pilots in an hour on a massive national stage, which I think Ryan should have with that sort of thing, to go, here's the data being presented, as opposed to on a far less exposed platform, as big as YouTube is. Merged isn't Joe Rogan, you know, where you've got bang, back that information firing off. I don't know. I just think maybe that's the kind of stuff, way back at the start when Layla mentioned about the continuation, could that have been on some other bigger piece?
I mean, I'll touch on that briefly, Andy. I think what we're seeing with Merged is kind of... this is Ryan's pitch for everything he's doing right now, mm-hmm. and the progress he's made with the committee and with his new established group. Yeah that he just announced. So what I see merged as is, I don't know. I mean, none of us know like how long he's going to be doing it or whatnot, how many episodes there will be. But I see it as this is him showing this is what we need to be doing. We need to hear from the pilots. They need to because I can't tell you how many like commercial pilots probably saw the past few episodes of these other pilots coming forward and they're like, whoa, this is cool. Oh, wait. So now there's somewhere I can go and report this. Awesome. So yeah, I think, you know, more than like really changing the conversation, I think what Ryan's doing is enriching the conversation and adding to the data. And I think this committee he established and this new group is only going to help. It's only going to help further the data. And honestly, you know, just keep our skies safe. Like Ryan has said, it's only going to take one of these things to collide for like everyone to be like, holy shit, we should have been paying attention to this all along. So yeah, I see merged as kind of a really well done sales pitch for everything that Graves is doing right now with his groups and whatnot. So yeah, I think it's great.
I thought you were going to get in somewhere in the skies plug at some point there, just with the line you made, but it was close. You've got a chance to do that soon. Dan, you've got an AI ET joke.
Yeah, well, just before I kind of share this amazing, incredible artificial intelligence generated joke, I think that's a really good way of looking at Merge, Ryan. Like, to me, it comes across like the Lex Fridman of UFOs, right? Just exploring that. But I think at some point it's going to expand because we're kind of getting everyone to a point where we kind of go, okay, so there's a thing here, let's investigate. Then there's work to do. And that stuff isn't, you know, scientists aren't going to be doing podcasts every day while they're investigating this stuff. They're going to investigate and present a peer-reviewed paper. So there's going to be a bit of quiet time while people figure this out. Something curious that you know, if any pilots are watching, let us know, because recently this week there were kind of some Northern Lights appearances kind of a bit further south than usual, some in the UK. And there was an EasyJet pilot that was flying from Reykjavik to Manchester in the UK. And he actually changed course so that people on both sides of the planes could see it. And I thought that was really interesting because we're constantly hearing commercial pilots saying, while I was flying people, I couldn't go off course. Yet this pilot did. And EasyJet were like, yeah, we're happy that this guy did that and gave our passengers a great experience. So they can go off course to take a closer look at some phenomena, I guess, depending on how far away it is. But I'm curious, like, does that mean that if there was a UAP, the pilot could just turn to get a better photo of it? Like, you know, it seems like a fairly cool thing to show passengers, and then we would have like a mass sighting in the air, right? So yeah, just to say that. But the ET joke, so why don't aliens visit our planet?
Go on.
It has terrible ratings, only 1 star.
That's actually not bad, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that from the AI, yeah?
It is, yeah.
I'm sorry, AI. South Park's already done that.
Yeah, and if anyone wonders about AI and how advanced it is, and are we approaching Terminator 2 Judgment Day's levels of Skynet? No, because that's what we're using it for currently still. Quick thought as well. Ryan, MJ Jumps on YouTube had mentioned your Alex Dietrich interview that was really cool. Says, one thing that stands out to me is no one ever discussed the object in the water that the Tic Tac was engaging with. Is there any data or information on that? Quick one, general thoughts. I know, Dan, we've talked about this before. Was it a whale? Was it some other kind of craft under the water breaking the waves? Any thoughts, gents?
I'll just say it was, I'm glad he asked that, and I'm glad I was able to ask her about it. The problem here is she's just a pilot, and she was sent up there to intercept the object in the air. She did say we went back to look for that disturbance in the water, and it was gone. And she literally said in the interview, it was the one time I think she kind of like got defensive with me. She was like, well, what the hell was I supposed to investigate? And I'm like, that's a good point. I think what MJ Jumps is trying to say is, was there a investigation afterwards? Yep. And we just don't know. And neither does Alex. She's not privy to that. You know, if there was an investigation post Tic Tac event, it was not done by a pilot. I could tell you that much. It was probably someone on the carriers or, in a submarine of some sort. That's kind of what I'm envisioning. So yeah, I think it's a very viable question, but it's not one that Alex felt comfortable really discussing, because she said, I did my job. I got back on the ship and I moved on with my life. So yeah. Yeah. But I, God, I feel like the answers to the Tic Tac lay in the water there somewhere. So I hope there was an investigation, and I hope someday we'll figure out what the hell that disturbance in the water was.
Dan, I'm sure if it was an EasyJet commercial pilot, you would have expected them to turn round, point the nose of the EasyJet liner at the water, and fly down to check out what it was.
Yeah, just go in, right? We have these multi-domain vehicles now. I assume EasyJet are employing them to transit passengers.
They would have charged it for the baggage, yeah.
Yeah, their baggage is so expensive. Come on.
Dan, I think we touched on it before, but again, quickly, the object under the water, is it something, is it a there, or was it something less special, let's say?
It seems that there was a there. I really loved actually what Alex said in the interview, because ultimately, we don't know. Like, what were people expecting? Like you just alluded to, Andy, you know, did people expect her to just land her jet in the water and get out and investigate it? Like, what would you even do? You know, something underwater isn't going to show up on radars for the planes and things like that. It could have been a multitude of things. You know, so whales, like you say, a sub that launched something that, you know, was the technology of the Tic Tac. Could have been a nuclear-powered something that attracted the attention of UFOs that we know happens. But realistically, there are practicalities about this. So we kind of just have to throw our hands up and say, I don't know.
Nathan?
Yeah, I've always looked at that as really a... hey, look over here situation. Because if you think about the size of the Tic Tac, the altitude they were flying at, they were at the location where they were supposed to be, but it's the ocean. It's difficult to see things, make things out, particularly if they're not moving very much. And it's a strange object to begin with. So the fact that the ocean is churning in that way, it's like, oh shit, like what, you know, there's something happening right there. Oh, what is that also that's right there? You know, so it's, I looked at the whole thing from more of a, this is getting the attention of the pilots to look down. So that, I know, kind of opens up a lot of speculation, but that entire event, for me at least, you know, lends to extraordinary speculation of the degree to which the object, the Tic Tac, you know, anticipated and was connected to those pilots and the cap point. There are just many different oddities about it that indicate a kind of level of, you know, psychological connection. So could there be a technology related to it? I mean, certainly, but I looked at it as more of a X marks the spot, you know, hey, look over here situation.
Awesome.
And that's something that I've heard before as well, just to kind of, you know, back Nathan up there. There's a channel called Bashar, and I mean like channeling, not like a TV channel. And he was asked about the Tic Tac. Someone said, if you're a being from another place, tell us about the Tic Tac. What is it? Where did it come from? Why were they here? And he just smirked and he said, the only purpose of that encounter was for the Tic Tac to say, look at us, here we are.
And on that note, gents, just think that leaves something for people to think about, I think. I'm going to ask everyone just to kind of plug what you're working on at the moment. Let folks know. Dan, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, so I'm currently traveling. I'm kind of trying to put together a bunch of videos just based on sites that I've been seeing, some ancient Maya sites and things like that. And in about three, four weeks, I'll be headed to Colombia to carry on the investigation on the mountain there of the light phenomena. And we're geared up with like thermal cameras and stuff this time. So we stand to, if it appears on the mountain, we can certainly strike off whether it's prosaic or whether we found a genuine place with ball lightning or something a little more profound.
Awesome. And I think we'll have Ash on soon anyway, and you on, and Vinny again to chat about the season two before it comes up. Nathan, what about yourself?
Yeah, calling all beings. We're continuing to have interesting conversations, you know, kind of make room for strange experiences. Really enjoying kind of the conversation we've had lately with folks in the Bigfoot area, which is something new to me, but really
I have seen I've seen some of those
Very interesting in a lot of parallels too to the UFO experience, and then in Liminal Frames with Exoacademia, and just continuing to kind of push this conversation forward and into some different territory, getting folks to think about the kind of broader implications of the phenomena, some of which I touched on the episode today. So yeah, that's the work, man. It's different than it was a year ago. I don't know how you would, you know, you and Dan and Ryan, you would kind of reflect on that. It's different, but it's good. Enjoy it.
Awesome. And Ryan, finally.
Yeah, man, I'm getting weird again. I'm so sick of balloons. I'm sick of all of it. I'm just being honest. So at Somewhere in the Skies, I'm going back to my roots. I'm talking to the experiencers. I'm talking about some of the more esoteric and sort of occult themed stuff with all of this. And yeah, next week I'm talking to Fred Andersen, a Swedish UFO investigator who looked into the Swedish Men in Black. So that's what you can sort of expect moving forward with Somewhere in the Skies. We're going back to the stories, the stuff that really matters, in my opinion. Yeah, be on the lookout for the new season of Ancient Aliens right now, doing some work on there, and coming out with a new book in just a few months now. Got the book cover design yesterday. Very stoked about that. So, yeah, be on the lookout for a new Somewhere in the Skies book in, I think, May, coming in May.
Awesome. I'll get you back on your own to talk about that one as well. And next up for me, I know what you mean, Ryan. I've got three members of the hobby group whose balloon was shot down over... I'll be putting out a short preview just to let people know what's coming up. But Chris Bledsoe's on in March. Ross Coulthart's coming on to answer some listener questions he never got to do last time. Graham Rendell's coming on. And I think that'll be it until April, to be honest, at this point. But other shows filling in between that as well. So listen, gents, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Nathan, stay safe in the storm. That's not a, you know, analogy of the actual storm that you're going through at the moment. Dan is merging into, if you're watching this on YouTube, one of the Simpsons characters, given his intense background. Apologies if that's triggered anything for anyone watching, any strobe effects. And Ryan, all the best living up there in Scotland. I hope you're still enjoying it.
Absolutely. I'm loving it, man. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Thank you, gents, and speak to you soon. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet, and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditated game of fateful on meta. I can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me.
That UFO podcast is sponsored by Zencastr. Zencastr is the all-in-one podcasting platform that allows you to remotely record and produce your show with the highest quality audio and video. All from the main dashboard, you can find a full suite of professional tools to get your show created and published in the easiest way possible. You'll always sound at your best, as Zencastr's post-production takes the headache out of audio production, setting your loudness and levels while reducing background noise with one click. Zencastr records video up to 4K to give you the perfect picture quality, whether you're in a shed or a studio. Then Zencastr will distribute your video podcast in crisp 1080p to all video podcast players. The biggest feature for me, folks, is that I get the local file recording from each guest, so their audio always comes through as best as it can, regardless of any choppy internet connections. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use code UFOPODCAST and you'll get 40% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.